At InDigital, we know the public safety professionals hold themselves to a high standard. In fact, standard doesn't do it justice. In over 25 years working alongside you, carrying millions of calls over our IP networks, your dedication has inspired us. That's why our ESINet goes beyond industry standards, not only I3 compliant, but designed to adapt to future development for a network you can count on when it matters most. Learn more at InDigital.net.
Rapid Deploy believes that every public safety agency, regardless of size, should have access to the data they need when it matters most. That's why, since 2016, our mission has been to reduce emergency response times and improve public safety. We are the industry's only integrated emergency response platform. Our web-based cloud platform includes analytics, mapping, dispatch, and mobile apps, purpose-built for 911 in the 21st century. Visit www.rapiddeploy.com to learn how we enable effective, efficient, data-driven emergency response.
If Within the Trenches has ever taught you something, opened your eyes to what it is like to be a 911 dispatcher, or has inspired you to become one, then help support us and join our Patreon. Get exclusive bonus content, one-of-a-kind swag, discounts on merchandise, ad-free early access to new episodes, and much more. To join, please visit patreon.com/WTTpodcast. And if you're an industry partner, we have something for you as well. And now, for the show.
This is Jordan, and you're listening to the Code 7 Podcast Network.
Warning. This episode contains the three A's of podcasting: adult content, adult language, and awesomeness. You've been warned.
Welcome to Within the Trenches, true stories from the 911 dispatchers who live them.
Going on, this is Ricardo with the Code 7 Podcast Network, and this is going to be Within the Trenches, true stories from the 911 dispatchers who live them. This episode is sponsored by InDigital as well as Rapid Deploy, and as always, there's a lot of stuff that's going on. We've got several episodes that are going to be coming up that I'm recording, and I've been a guest on a few other podcasts. One of them was Roll with the Punches, and I'm going to be on the U Project. So there's a lot of different things that are coming up, and I'm very excited. One of the goals that I had for 2021 was to be a guest on podcasts that are outside of the 911 space, so that I could share my story out there more and build a little more interest for everything that's going on in public safety and the job that 911 dispatchers and call takers do on a daily basis. The most vital piece of public safety. So it has been really good so far, and between the virtual events and just everything. Thank you all so very much. It has been awesome. It's been an amazing experience. As well as thank you to all the patrons. I wouldn't be able to do everything I do if it wasn't for all of you. So if you're looking at for some bonus content, actually something new that I added as well is the live broadcasts have always just been broadcasts. They've been on YouTube or on Facebook or on Twitter. That's Open Mic Live as well as the Dispatchers Roundtable. Well, as an added bonus for those who are patrons, there's going to be an audio version of that as well. A lot of them were saying, they don't always get to check out those sessions when they're live, and they would like to hear them, to at least hear them. So that'll be something cool that's coming for patrons as well. So once again, thank you all very, very much. Now, I am excited for my guest today. I met her briefly and heard her speak at the Be the Difference conference. And it's just everything that she talked about. It was called Say This, Not That. And we're going to get into that here as well, to talk about that session, because there's a lot of good tips in there. And we'll be getting to that one here. But again, I'm excited and I'm pumped. And my guest today is Dawn, and she's a 911 lead dispatcher with Davis County out of Utah, as well as an instructor for the Denise Amberlee Foundation. Hey.
Hi. Hey, thanks for having me.
Good. Yeah, thank you for being on. This is going to be good. Now, you're at work at the moment, right?
Yeah. I know. As soon as I'm done with this, I'm going back to the floor. So,
well, it is awesome that you're able to take a break here for a little bit to come on and talk with me here about your story. And I believe when Be the Difference conference was going on, you were at work as well, right?
Yeah. So I know it's how it goes at dispatch. It seems like
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. You know it. So a couple things. First off, you did amazing during your session. As I was watching, I was chatting. I had a private channel, a group channel open on Discord with my friend Leah, as well as Tanya and Nathan and Emily. And I was sending messages to Nathan. I was like, dude, she's at work right now. One, she's doing an amazing job with her talk, and she's straight up holding her phone so still throughout this whole thing. And I thought, her arm has got to be killing her.
It was. Yeah, that's what was so funny. I'm like, I go to the gym every day. I'm like, how is this so hard? Like, but holding this like little phone. But it was funny.
Yeah, either way, you did excellent. No one would have ever known that your arm was just burning.
this time I have a nice setup of two binders holding it together.
So perfect. Well, again,
government
very
budget.
Well done. Yeah.
How we make it work.
And you know what? That's how it happened. So the second thing I was gonna mention was that you kind of took me back a little bit to when I was in dispatch, trying to do a project when I was in dispatch, I was also going to college, and I had to do everything online. So I'd be taking phone calls as well as doing my homework sometimes at the same time. So in between calls, I would be doing my discussions or other projects that I was doing. And a lot of times when I was in school, those main projects had to do with dispatch, which was, you know, sharing stories and all different types of things. So seeing you at work made me, and doing everything you were doing made me think, made me flash back to when I was there and doing things as well. And it was cracked me up, but you did beautifully. Well done.
Thank you.
So I want to learn more about you because, again, just with everything that you were doing, you've been doing this for about 16 years, right? That's what we said there in the beginning.
Yeah. It was, I wanted to do this ever since I was younger, even just a little kid. So when I was little, just in elementary school, I actually went and interviewed a dispatch agency because the teachers had like a little assignment said, go, you know, visit, where you wanted to work and write a little paper. So I visited a dispatch center and here I am just like a little kid. And I'm like, yeah, I want to work here. And everyone in there was like, why? don't. And at the time I was like, well, that's a weird thing to say. Cause everybody else was, you know, more welcoming or like, oh, hey, you know, like the, you know, friends who had interviewed maybe like the fire department or other things. But I was like, well, that's interesting. But now that I work here, I totally get it. Why they would be like, no, don't go somewhere else. Cause like while my, you know, I mean, dispatching is a passion, but I mean, it definitely has its setbacks and things like that. But yeah, but once I was 18, I applied to be a dispatcher and I've been doing it since. And it just, you know, it was passion. Like I just wanted to do it. But there was other hooks for me too. Cause like when my mom used to be a dispatcher actually. Mm-hmm. And she, I would visit her and I just loved that they had a soda machine. So that was like the start was just soda. I was like, I want to work somewhere where I can just get soda whenever I want it. And so honestly, that's what it was. But here I am, look, with my soda. There's a soda place right across the street. So it's worked out. I'm living the dream.
I was just going to, that's crazy. Yeah. I was just going to say that. Like, you're living the dream.
Yeah, I did it.
So, okay, let's backtrack a little bit. So you first started out like that. So here's the crazy thing is that, and I've been seeing this a lot, and you know, maybe you've seen it as well, and others who are watching and listening to this on social media, you know, a lot of people are saying, you know, we need to do or change something with the profession where, you know, you see all these posters with the police, man or woman or fireman or, you know, whichever, and it's a poster that kids look up to and they think, oh, I want to be, I want to be a cop, or I want to be a firefighter, or EMT or something like that. Nobody ever says that they want to be dispatch when they grow up. They want to be a dispatcher, a call taker. However, here's the unicorn right here.
I know.
You actually,
I was me. Yeah.
Yes.
When I was little. Yeah. It is so funny. But yeah, I think, I mean, part of that obviously, cause I was exposed to it. So, I mean, obviously more exposure just for everyone would be so great. And I think recognition, that's what plays into it too, because for instance, you know, in our local area, we delivered a baby. And it was a, you know, which is done, but it was just cool. And the family wanted to thank them. So they're like, hey, can we meet with them? So sure enough, who do they get? The EMTs, the paramedics, you know, the people there, who did they forget? You know, dispatch. So, and it's not that dispatchers ask for recognition. Most of the time we're like cats. We want food and left alone, you know? Right.
So this is true. Yeah.
and occasionally we just want some, a little like affirmation, but like, but the most part, you know, with dispatchers, that's not what we're looking for, but it sometimes is hard seeing everyone else get it. Then you're more aware, like, okay, you know, now we're the redheaded stepchild, you know, like, or just you're forgotten. And I think if there was more awareness, recognition, like that, and including dispatchers, then the public would see it, kids would see it. And I think, you know, not that the posters are a great idea, but I think just hey, let's do something for them, people would be like, oh, this is cool, I want to do something like that, I want to make a difference. So
then, okay, so how old were you again when you were first in there? I guess what I want to kind of focus on here a little bit too is, do you remember what it was like going in there and your mom being there and stuff that you were hearing? Because, I mean, obviously it made an impact if you thought it was cool enough that when you got this class assignment, you wanted to go and say, hey, I want to do this. Tell me some things.
Yeah. Well, it's funny to say that. Yeah. Like the being involved, like, I mean, hearing things like that, it didn't seem like it was like, oh, this is something scary. It seemed more like it was like a math problem that needed to be solved, or like, hey, I'm going to, you know, connect these pieces, send this like a puzzle, not like a, you know. At a young age, it wasn't the connection of like, these are real people with real lives, just because like as a kid, you just kind of, you know, don't connect that part. Right. So it, you know, but and then as I go, yeah, the soda, that was a huge part. And then and it was like the cool old school, like glass bottle, like vending machine. But
oh, man. Yeah.
It was nice. So, but now, I mean, like there was some things that I clued into right away there. Mm-hmm. Was I saw how family oriented it was in the dispatch center, how connected they were. My mom had friends off the floor, you know, that she would hang out with. And then there was Christmas, which made me sad because I don't think some of the stuff happens as like it did before. Well, I know it doesn't happen the same, but we would have dispatch Christmas parties. Like I would go, like all of us kids that were kids of the dispatchers, we'd get together and they like brought in a Santa and, you know, like just things like that. It just felt like you had the second family, and that part, I sensed that right away. And that was something that I wanted.
It's yeah. I was going to say it's interesting because I kind of feel like that might've been the same way for my son. So he's 16. He's going to be 17 actually next week. Oh my God. I would bring him in sometimes. Well, my wife would bring him in rather, or we would just stop by there. You know, if we were in the area, we would stop by and just say hello. And he would be running around and would hear traffic and stuff. And I'd say, this is what this is. This is what this is. And I just remember like the look in his eyes, just, you know, eyes popping out like, this is cool. I'm like, it is cool.
Yeah, it is cool.
But seeing that as well, you know, all of us there being there, just like you're saying, you know, as a family and stuff, that I think that's one of the things that I miss the most about being in dispatch is that camaraderie. You know, you're in there for all these hours together. You see them more than you see your family sometimes. And that's how they become. They become your family, especially if you end up hanging out with them afterwards as well, on the weekend or whichever. You know, it just continues to build, and that it just makes it that much more strong.
Yeah, no, it's for sure it's that way.
So you end up doing this project where you're saying that you want to do this. years pass, and you were how old now when you actually ended up getting into it then? You were about 18?
Yeah, so I applied when I was 18, mm-hmm. and the background took so long that I was 19. I'm just kidding. Oh. No. Doesn't that feel like backgrounds take that long?
It does.
But yeah, I applied when I was 18. So I graduated. I was a nerd, first of all. So I skipped a grade of school. And I graduated when I was 17. And I went down. I had a scholarship. And, you know, I did a year of scholarship away, like out. I moved away for that. And then I came back and here I was. So now I was 18, did a year of college and I was like, okay, you know, I'm coming back. I'm like, I want to look into this. And I looked in and I was like, oh yeah, I meet all the qualifications. And then sure enough, like applied. And just right after I turned 19, like I, started and I've been doing it since. And I can't, now I'm like, I can't imagine doing anything else, but.
So what was that like for you then? Going into it, because you had the exposure already, you know, your mom had done this and, you know, you had done this project. It was something that you were, you know, stoked to do in the beginning, right off the bat. So now you're going to apply. I mean, how did that feel? I mean, you're what, second generation then, right?
Yeah. So, it was pretty cool. Cause like, obviously, where I lost my mom, I mm-hmm. just felt like it was a way I could connect with her. And it was a way, like, I felt like I could carry a piece of her or like, and almost get to know her more. Like, you know, I didn't have the opportunity to get to know her just because she died when I was 9. Mm-hmm. So this was a way I could, you know what she went through. You know, I like that aspect. So it was kind of unique for me in that regard. But also, I just kind of felt empowered. I saw them do it. I just felt like, oh, I, you know, this is something that I can do. And I just knew, like, went into it thinking like, oh, and I'll enjoy this as well. So I liked that there wasn't a lot of fear, you know, like I felt empowered, I felt encouraged, optimistic, you know, so there was a lot of positive feelings going in.
That is excellent right there. When I went into it, I didn't know what to think. Like I didn't have any experience at all. I didn't have that exposure or anything. But you know, after doing it for, you know, a while, it got into my blood and it was something, I loved it. It was all that I wanted to do. So you end up getting hired. What is the training like? Like what do you end up going into? Cause you've been doing this for 16 years now.
Yeah.
And I guess also, you know, how much has the technology changed from that time in the beginning to now?
It's so bizarre. I mean, you have to think like, you know, cell phones. So at this time when I'm like starting, cell phones was just coming out and it was mm-hmm. something that some people were getting, some people didn't. And if you had it, you only had the snake game, you know, the snake game that would eat them, you know, that was the only game on your phone. And then, but then now like, look at everything that we're doing with our phones. I mean, we're doing this. So, I mean, you have text to 911, you know, just being able to use the satellites to get people's locations off of cell phones. I mean, the whole location thing, that's when I started to now. So it's been interesting just because, you know, landlines, you know, people phasing out to cell phones. And I mean, there was a phase where I was working where the technology hadn't caught up in dispatch. So when people would call in cell phones, it was quite a struggle. And I worked in a rural area. So, you know, you had some serious BFE areas. So right. Like when people would call and they're like, I'm on the main road. And it's like, well, crap, like where is that, like,
yeah.
They're like, I honest to goodness, I had one caller who told me, she's like, I'm right under the moon, because I asked her, I was like, is there anything you can see? But like, it was just nothing. But she's like, the moon, I see the moon. I'm like, well, that's not gonna help us, you know. And so there was a lot of trial and error, I think, you know, in that phase. And so now where technology has caught up more, you know, rapid SOS, like things like that, I'm like, oh my gosh, it's nice to have. And that's why I'm so passionate about training. I want people to have as many tools as possible in their toolbox to be able to do their job. Cause there was a phase where I'm like, you know, where it wasn't there, you know, and it could be technology and other things, but it just, there was a gap.
Yeah. That makes me think of, you know, being in dispatch and we would have, we had a huge like game area and people would go out there and hike and then they would get lost And they would call us and they would say, I don't know where I'm at. And so we're trying to do everything we can, or and even to, you know, call the cell phone companies, the carriers, and see if they can get a better location by pinging them. And, you know, sometimes it would work and sometimes it wouldn't. So then, you know, you start thinking outside the box and or trying your best to. And, you know, really it ends up coming down to, especially if it's getting a little darker, because I work midnight shifts. So, you know, we would have an officer who's in the area, and I'd say, flash your lights. So the lights would go on and they would, you know, be calling for them. And I would say, do you see the lights? Do you hear the siren? Do you hear them calling or anything? Yeah, I do. And so that's, you know, that's how we would get people, how we would find them.
Marco Polo. Yeah. But like, who knew that that would come into play in your training later? Yeah. But we seriously, that's how we had to do it. It was the same thing. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like, can you hear the sirens? Can you do this? Can you do that? Yeah. Like, and just trial and error. Like, you have 1 million keys on your key ring and you're like, is it this one? Is it this one?
Yeah.
This one, you know, and you're just going through all those things with your collar, just being like, how about now? You know? So,
right.
I can relate. Yeah.
So you get in there. Now you say you had, you know, this confidence and empowerment and everything going in. Do you remember what it was like that first day when you're walking in and you know, if you can kind of paint a picture, of what you're looking at? So you walk in and, you know, how many monitors are there? What is it that you're seeing? And you go in, and did you still have that same feeling actually being in there and getting ready to train? And all right, here we are.
Well, I guess, like, you know, for like, I'm petite in size already. So, mm-hmm. you know, like, I'm like 5'1", 5'2", depending on what shoes I'm wearing. And then, you know, and being so young, like going in, like, I was worried about that, because I could mm-hmm. see that, you know, there was a difference between like me and others on the floor. So, I mean, there was like hesitation, like, man, hope the new kids at school like me. Kind of thing.
Right. I have to share my gummy bears.
Yeah. And then, you know, and then, yeah, like seeing all the monitors and stuff, it became more real. And I think there's always going to be a gulp factor, if you will, mm-hmm. when it's like, oh, now here we are, we're going to do this. So, but yeah.
So do you remember your first call or any of those earlier calls?
Oh,
when you started taking them?
Yeah, I remember, you know, one, and I was in training and I was like, I'm going to do so good on this, because I was so studious. You know, I was kind of more studious type person. So I did this call and I was like, I asked all the questions and I got all the answers. And then my trainer turned to me and she's like, that took you 12 minutes. And I was like, what? Like, but I did good, I thought. And she's like, no. And so I was like, well, but I don't understand. So it was kind of funny, like being like, hey, you need to get all this stuff, but you have to do it fast. And I was just so aware, like, oh man. Like, so it was just interesting learning that it wasn't going to be organized in the sense of like every call is going to be different, and that I couldn't just use this like book and be like, did I do it? Yep, I did it. Did I do it? Yep, I did it. That it was going to, that I was like, wow, I'm going to need to learn a lot more than I thought. So I think that was a realization for me that like, this isn't going to be, you know, a 3-month training process. This is going to be, you know, like I'm going to learn, continue to learn off the floor. You know, I think I went into it a little bit naive, thinking like, okay, I'll train and then I'll know how to do it. But, you know, so obviously, you know, you can't take 12 minutes per caller. So,
right. Yeah. Because there is so much information to get. And it's just listening to you say all of that makes me, you know, flashback to myself as well. And, you know, it's so that 3 months that you were thinking that it was going to take, you know, when I first started out, in Florida, and that first night I was told to take a 911 call. And told, you know, you're not going to be able to do, the only way you're going to learn to do this is by jumping right in and doing it. I did have like a 40-hour beginners class that I did with a bunch of other dispatchers and call takers from around the area. But it was like, just like you said, it was just continuing to learn as I'm in there. Now, when I ended up moving back home to Southwest Michigan, where I was working for a central dispatch in Allegan County, the county that I grew up in, that was different because I had that exposure and that training already of 3.5 years worth of experience. my training was about that. It was about 3.5 months that I ended up having that training, but everything was just, it was just so fast. I remember actually going home and having all of my 10 codes all written out on sheets and having having my wife quiz me on them, and then trying to remember all the ORIs and trying to remember all of these other incident codes and memorize all of them, just memory. And I finally got it, but man, it was intense.
Yeah, it is studying all that stuff. I remember, like, because I was, when I moved back, because I had moved away for college for a year, but I came back and I was still going to college when I started. So like you, like I was, do college, like I worked nights and then I would do college in between, like my classes and stuff in between. But then I had a gym class that I couldn't take online. So that was required. So I would go there, but then I would just hit the treadmill and all the 10 codes, all the things that I need to study. I just was like, I need to get these down just because there's so much to learn. I was like, whatever I can learn outside. I was like, I wanted to do it just to get that better, start. So just memorizing stuff. Yeah.
It's something else. You know, those who are watching and listening, if you are just starting out and everything, memorization is good. it's your friend, because there was a time where, like, when I was training, they had us memorize everything. A little bit later on, there was another person who ended up saying, you know, I'm not sure that I really care if they memorize it. I just want them to know where to find it if they need to. And I remember being on the other end of that and kind of arguing a little bit and saying, but it might be better if they still, you know, memorize. Yeah, it's good to know where to find it, but if they have it in their head already, that'll shave down some time from having to look it up. Because what if the system goes down and what it is that they're trying to look up, it's not there.
Yeah.
But it can be in their brain and it'll still help out.
Yeah. Well, and that's what's hard too, is like being a trainer myself, like, I tell them like, hey, make sure you do this. But as you learn and those things that, like, things that you can pick up and you can become an expert in, now you're more skilled and more confident. You know, it just helps you. So makes you be better.
Yeah, exactly. Now, how many years were you dispatching and call taking before you ended up, you know, doing training as well? You know, was there something that, you know, maybe happened, or was it just that passion for public safety that you wanted to be able to help that next generation that was coming in too?
Just next one. You know, honestly, it was just my next phase. As soon as I felt like, hey, I was confident in it. So I actually did my first, you know, I worked about, you know, between 4 and 5 years at Logan, and I dispatched for all of Cache County. And so it was kind of nice. It was more rural area called town. But for multiple agencies, and then my husband, he got a job and moved, and then I worked at a dispatch for a train. It did trains for, you know, we weren't a primary PSAP, but we were secondary, so that one was a little bit interesting. But we had crazy emergency calls there that people didn't realize. For instance, like, we had this kid who he got separated from his parents while boarding the train, but then he ran after the train. So he's just 5, but there was a train coming from the other direction. And so that one was unique in coordinating units, like, okay, I need who can intercept this child, you know, before I got 2 minutes before this train's going to arrive. Who do I have? You know what I mean? It was just a lot of math almost. And so I like that. And which the child lived, we were able to intercept him. So that was cool. It was really quick. So I mean, you'd have stuff like that. And then, but we actually got consolidated. So we got laid off. And that was hard for me because I had just had a baby. I had my first, but then I applied for another agency, and this one was with Layton, just in the same, like, closest area. So I got a job there, and then there, once I was there, I was like, okay, you know, I want to do this and I want to teach. And so any opportunity there was to teach, I put in for it. And then there is where I worked there over a decade. So I stayed there for over a decade, and I actually just came over here to Davis County just in October. So, but same thing, just for, like, just any, you know, looking for that platform where I can engage more, you know, have that leash to be able to help people more is important to me. But so I teach at Post, which is like our class that that's required in Utah. If you want to be mm-hmm. a dispatcher in Utah, you have to complete that that 40-hour course. And I teach one of the days for that course. And then I taught at my agency, and then I'm actually the Utah APCO vice president right now, which is over training. Most people know what APCO is. There's APCO and NENA that are pretty active in the 911 areas. APCO is more popular in the Western area. So, mm-hmm. but it's just nice. Like I never want someone to be put in a job and be like, I hope a 911 call doesn't come in. I hope a 911 call doesn't come in. I used to play sports in high school. So, you know, you want to empower everyone to feel like, I want to be the person that takes that last minute shot, not be like, I hope I don't have to, you know, so with dispatchers, that same concept of being like, I want to be put in the game. I want to take that call. I want to help someone. I wanted people to feel confident and, you know, excited to be there and empowered, you know, all those things. I didn't want them to be like, oh crap, or nervous or hesitant or being like, please don't phone ring. Does that make sense? So
yeah,
I just wanted.
Yeah. It's put me in, coach. Like, yes, I'm ready to play.
Concept, yeah. And I wanted to inspire other people to everyone's different. Sometimes people mm-hmm. needed confidence. Sometimes people needed training, whatever it was they needed. I wanted to be that person to help be their friend and help fill that void. And so many agencies, they're like, well, we don't have a budget. We don't have this. We don't have that. And it's like, okay, well, how can I help? You know, so, you know, can I help teach for free? Can I do this? Can I do that? Whatever it is, you know, like, we're all in this together. So that's
right. Yeah. It's, and I understand you completely, because, you know, I remember I would see, there was one point at my center where we had, we were so short staffed that all of us turned into trainers. We had, I think, 3 CTOs, certified training officers, for those in the general public who watch and listen to this as well. But I wasn't a CTO, but we all needed to be trainers to try to train them as fast as possible.
Yeah.
But also still, you know, taking our time in a sense to have them do all these different types of things. But we would hear that sometimes where people would say, oh man, I hope this isn't a medical. Oh man, I hope this isn't this or that, or I hope this isn't this. And you're thinking, damn, like I don't want them to feel like this, because, you know, it does suck in the beginning, because you are dealing with new stuff all the time. Whenever you answer the phone, it's not going to be the same thing. It might be the same incident type, but it's not the same situation. And something crazy might just happen, but that's 911. But like you were saying, you don't want them to have that nervousness, and you want them to have that confidence so that when they pick up the phone, because my old phone system, if you hit the button, which is basically the speakerphone, if you hit the button before picking up the handset, you would hear what was going on. And sometimes you would hit the button and all you hear is screaming. Yeah. And then everyone would be like, uh-oh. And then, you know, you pick up the phone and you start doing the call. And then what do you hear? Hard, fast typing. And you know the shit is going down. And you would see that in the trainees sometimes, where they would hear it. You know, they would be watching you and you'd hit that, and it just happened to be one of those where, you know, people are screaming and it's a domestic or something, and you could see it in their face, like this is what we deal with, this is what we do. Yeah, this is what we do, but we want to train you and help you build that confidence.
Yeah. Well, because that, like when you said that, it's like when they're like, oh no, I hope it's not this. Yeah, not just for them, but like for the patient, for the other people. Like, I just, you know, sometimes, like what we said earlier, that dispatch gets left out. You know, I see officers get sent to like these like really nice trainings out of state or things like that. And dispatchers, I know that they're like, oh, that just doesn't happen for us. And I'm like, oh, you know, so I'm just trying to, you know, change that. And, you know, and also, like, if there's extra projects that we need to do, let's do it. Like, if there's something that we can do to make things better for us, for other people, you know, what can we do to get it done?
Exactly. What is your favorite part about training?
Well, for those that know me, this is embarrassing, but they'll be like, I love to talk, and I talk a lot. And so when I'm training, I have like this captive audience. Mm-hmm. So like they're trapped. So, but no, it's like someone to connect to. I'm that person. I'm not, I when I talk with in my personal life, just tell in personal stories, I talk in story, like if I'm teaching. And so that's why teaching is, it seems so seamless with me, just because, you know, I teach that, you know, I talk that way normally. So teaching, it just, it's not that much of a, it doesn't seem like it's a jump for me. Mm-hmm. It just is a continuation. It's just a flow. And then when I can see someone like achieve it, or I see someone do great, like people that I've trained, I'm like, hey, you know, like we did this, we achieved this. So that's pretty cool.
That is awesome. So what shift do you, you're working right now. So you work, do you always work day shift then?
No, I'm working overtime.
Oh no. So just, okay.
Yeah. Help, I know, overtime. I'm helping out covering shifts. But normally I work evenings. Mm-hmm. So I'll work like 4 PM till 2 AM. So, but today I'll work till 10 PM, like after this. So my Mountain Standard Time.
So here's an odd question then. What's your favorite part? Of dispatching, like what's your favorite position to work? Is it being on the radios, or is it actually answering the phones? Which one would you?
Oh, well, that one's, I can tell you my least favorite.
Okay.
Well, so I mean, I love working swings is my favorite shift, just because, mm-hmm. I mean, I like, sometimes when I work days, I feel like we get more routine calls, and you know, where it's like, hey, I missed this detective's call, or like,
right,
you know,
yeah, a lot of admin calls, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, just like, oh, hey, over the weekend, you know, this was stolen, I need to report it, that type of stuff. And so anyways, so I like that swings, it's different, and I feel like it's more like real stuff. Like, not that the other stuff isn't real, but just, mm-hmm. you know, the stuff that you do this for, that you get in for. And then so what happened with the shifts is, what positions we work is, we have a service channel, mm-hmm. and that's more like where you run plates and get toes and people, and yeah, that one's less fun for me. I mean like it needs done, but like it's not right. Like, you know, I feel like it's less, you're less in control. I mean, like, not control, like I guess that wouldn't be a better word for it, but just I like doing the puzzle part of it. I like putting stuff together, and there's no puzzle with running somebody. You just run them and be like, here's the information, if right. that makes sense. Or like, here, I got your toe, I did it, you know.
Yeah exactly. So, yeah. That for us in Michigan, when I was over there, that position was called lean, and that's where we ran all of our NCIC stuff, you know, license plates, yeah. warrants, yep. all of that. The other thing, however, was that we were also backup phones and backup radios. So if things went to hell on radios and they had a chase, they would send all of that traffic to a secondary channel, which if I was sitting there, I would have to run that channel as well as answering phones too.
Yeah.
But you know, and then, you know, the main radios would have the other channel that they're holding down because of the chases. The only time, actually, no, I was going to say the only time that one was fun, it wasn't. I'm the same as you, because there would be some times you would come in and it would be actually so busy during the day that all of those warrants or whichever that was there, they would still be there when you got there at night. So you're all right, I got to put all these in.
Yep.
Because it's left for you to do it, and it's got to get done. So you got to do it. But for me, yeah, phones or radios, those were my two most favorite to be on, unless it was a drunk driving grant and they were just running a lot of people and the possibility that they might actually have someone with the warrant, or it was one of those big alerts and, oh man, we actually have this person, or this car is stolen, part of that puzzle like you're talking, then it was actually kind of cool. Or if it was a weekend where officers showed up at a house where there was loud music and it turned out to be an underage party that was going on, and I got to be the one to call the parents to say, hey, you need to pick up your kid. That actually made it kind of fun, because I remember one time calling, and one of the, I don't remember if it was the mom or the dad, but I remember hearing the parent in the background saying, what did they do? What? Oh, son of a, and they were just, so, and then I got off the phone. I was like, I'm sorry. It's not your fault, man. Like, you're not my kid. You didn't do this to them, or whichever. And so then, you know, they'd have to go and pick them up, and I would get the officer on the secondary channel and say, parents have been notified. They're, just so you know, a little upset. And, you know, yeah, they would kind of chuckle and say, well, all right, we'll see what happens when they get here.
I know. Well, and that part, I mean, like, it is funny, like, how we take small joy and, like, the stuff like that. But in dispatch, right, when you can laugh, you should laugh, because sometimes, exactly, you can't.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So any moment, as with my open mic sessions, I'm a firm believer that laughing is good medicine. And sometimes in the job, you have to find humor in some of that, because it's just like when you have a kid that's playing on a phone that doesn't have service, but they can call 911 and you actually find them, you get that, like Mr. Burns from The Simpsons, like, excellent. Like, found out, it's where totally they're at. True.
It is. It's true.
And then you're able to get them out there, because the other thing too is, it's not just, you know, satisfaction in that. It's, what if what it is that they're saying is actually true? What, yeah, if these kids that are actually, that are playing on the phone and saying all this crazy stuff, what if it sounds like they're playing, but they're not really playing? You know, that's that, you know, we're treating these calls as emergencies until we find out otherwise, you know? Yeah. So there's those types of calls too. But then, you know, you get people who call in that talk about, I don't know, just they're 1096, you know, they've got different issues that are going on. But what if that is actually going on? And then, you know, you get them out there and, you know, you save a life.
Yeah, no, for sure.
It's a crazy job.
It is. Well, I know. But it really is rewarding. I mean, like, mm-hmm, you know, so like working phones and radio, like we had two incidents recently. One when I was working on radio, one when I was on phones, where we had a suicidal individual. So we had one where he was trying to, so our big interstate in Utah, so on I-15, the one that runs through the whole state, mm-hmm, we had someone who was trying to jump in front of a car. I mean, and this, so it's 75 mile per hour zone, so it's pretty fast. Mm-hmm. I mean, and you, like, just coordinating, like, it, like, just trying to coordinate all the responses, like, hey, we need to shut off this off-ramp, we need to get a unit here, 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 and being a smaller agency, because we're not big, like, we have to utilize other resources. And so coordinating, like, multi-agencies, saying, like, okay, teamwork, like, this is what we're doing. Like, it was nice to be able to, like, do something like that, to feel like, hey, you know, we were able to help this person, you know. And then the same with the phones, like, here we had this, you know, this wife, you know, she was super frantic. She was trying to reach her husband. He was at his work, but he was Snapchatting her, him with a noose, you know. So he was just telling her goodbye, you know, this and this. And then, you know, that thing, just being like, okay, well, now I need to get his location. And anytime you're trying to find a secondary location, because, I mean, he didn't call 911, so I can't use those, like, same resources that I normally do, you know, and T-Mobile. And we're, like, same thing. We have some pretty rural areas. So when we pinged his phone, they were like, here's a 3,000-meter accuracy ping. I'm like, thanks. You know, so, but yeah. Anyways, being able to be like, okay, what else do I have? What else do I have? And feeling like, okay, we can still do this. We were able to save him, but, it was really rewarding. I mean, even though, like, and that one was hard because it was probably an hour long ordeal. Mm-hmm. And at one point I was on the phone with the wife, but he called her, and this was his final goodbye. Cause at this point, so now he has the noose and he's on the bridge, out in like a rural area. And, but I was like, well, can he hear me? And she's like, yeah, he can. So then, like, my call changed. And now she had already called 911, but she accepted him too. So now we're a three-way call.
Right.
And I was just talking to him and I said, hey, you know, life is so hard. Instead of thinking about all of it, just for right now, just focus on 5 minutes. Can you wait just 5 minutes? And that bought me enough time to get help to where he was. But yeah, he had already, like, but as far as, especially how close he was, you know, where he was already with a noose and everything. So, but being able to achieve those, I feel like you get that greater reward, you know. That's why I get, like, it's fun to work those channels, you know, in the sense, you know, being on police or being on phones, to, you know, have those moments where you can change someone's life. But it also comes with a cost, because sometimes you'll take those calls that are heavy. And even though this one was a win, it was hard. Like, I couldn't have a break, you know. It was so draining. I drank all my soda and no time to go get another one, like all the, yeah, caffeine, you know, and that. And so it would have been nice to have that. So, but you know, overall, like, obviously I would still pick this job, you know, if it came around again to like change things, I would still do it all over again.
It's, oh, I'm listening to you as you're telling that story, and it makes me think that, and I'm sure you've dealt with this as well, being on the other side, you know, if it's, you know, one of your partners who's taking one of those calls, everyone in the room, other than whatever radio traffic is going on, it's all of you just working like a well-oiled machine, right? You know, you're all working together to do this, but also at the same time, you know, you're at the edge of your seat because it's you who is taking this call. You're right in the thick of it. And everyone else is working as fast as they can to assist you as well in different things. And you're probably also not only typing in the narrative of what the person is saying, who is out there, or, you know, your main caller, you know, because you're on a three-way, you're typing in all this other stuff, but you're also probably at the same time looking at different maps or putting in, you know, GPS or whichever, trying to figure out this puzzle to save this person's life. And it's, I'm at the edge of my seat. You can't see it, but I'm at the edge just listening to you. And I think my watch even popped up and said, you need to breathe, because I wasn't breathing while I was listening to you. But it gets like that, right? When you're in there and you're all working together.
Yeah, especially with this area, because I was like, how many bridges? I mean, this isn't something that, you know, you memorize, because this is a rural area. So these aren't bridges that roads, that cars cross. This isn't a normal bridge. This is like bridges in like farmland and like water irrigation. And like, you know, it was up Weber Canyon area. So it was on the border between our agency and another agency. So up this mountainside, up the canyon, and Utah has beautiful mountains, you know? And so it's like, okay, what kind of bridges are there even, you know? So it's unique. So I'm like, I'm going through and I'm like, okay, this is what I'm working with. And so I'm trying to capture. So in that moment while I'm talking to him, I was capturing pictures off of Google Maps. Look, this is the bridge. This is what it's going to be. This is your access point and different things, you know. And I'm hoping like, oh man, I don't know how much off-roading they can go, or, you know, I'm not there. I don't know how far their cars are going to be able to reach. And, you know, so there was a lot of that dynamic going on. And while you're doing that, I'm out of the game, right? So all the other calls, that means only other, like my coworkers, they're shouldering now my workload, because I'm stuck on, not stuck, but like I'm busy with this critical incident. So I can't help with anything else.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You 911 doesn't stop. You know, that's something I always tell people, you know, no matter what incident that is going on, big or small, 911 doesn't stop. Life doesn't stop. It continues going and going and going, and you don't get a break. Just like you said, you know, you didn't get a break from that time to, you know, from the next one. And, you know, sometimes we do get a break. In this case, there wasn't. How many people do you have working at a time?
So if we try not to do this, but sometimes if we're so short, like if someone calls in sick and stuff, we can work down to even just two. It'll just be two of us. But best case scenario is that we'll have at least four to five.
Man. So, yeah. So it's kind of about the same size then as my, the last center that I was at. Our minimum was three. And if it was like on a midnight shift, you know, like probably from like three to five, when someone would come in, just those last 2 hours, we could go down to two if we needed to. But the minimum was always three.
Yeah. Like we had someone and they started ralphing in the toilet and they're like, I'm fine. I'm like, no, like you can, I will answer all the calls. Go.
Yeah.
Like because that's the thing. I'm a sympathy vomiter. That's hard for me. Mm-hmm. Like to, you know, when people throw up on the phone and you're like, you're their vomiting coach and you're like, you're doing great. You know, like right. I hate that part. I'm not a fan.
I can.
the sounds. Ugh.
Right. I can just see you being on the line and you're coaching someone, but at the same time, you're like dry heaving, like not making a sound, but maybe just making, you know, the face.
Yeah. Well, cause like, even though I'm not there, I'm like, I'm smelling it. I am like, I can smell it somehow, even though it's over the phone.
And that's one of the things that, you know, I've told people before, you know, when I've gone, even now, I've been out of dispatch. This July will be 8 years since I've been out of dispatch. And even now when I go get my haircut and stuff, you know, they'll ask what I do. And sometimes I'm not sure what to say, what I do. Like I guess I'm a podcaster. I've got this media company thing that I'm trying to build. Yeah. I'm a startup or whatever, but I always go back to what it was that started all of this. And that's dispatch. Yeah. And they'll ask me, and I've told them, you know, what's the craziest thing you've heard? I'm like, well, I've been on a phone call while someone decided to go pee, and I can't do anything. I'm just sitting there, you know, and they don't, and sometimes people don't tell you, right? Mm-hmm. They're like, can you hold on just a minute? And you hear them set the phone down, and then you just hear them go, and you're like, okay, yeah, we're doing this. Like, all right.
We're doing this. Yep. So it's so true. It's so true.
Yeah. And there's nothing you can do but take it.
Yep. I know the sounds that we've heard, right?
Yeah, so, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Now, so you've been doing this for 16 years now, and mm-hmm. you know, you obviously have a passion for this. You love this job. You know, you're a trainer as well. Is all of this and this experience that you've had one of the reasons why you also wanted to be an instructor with the Denise Amberlee Foundation?
Just because, like, with my, you know, with my personal life, that's a huge mm-hmm. drive for me, you know, just because some of the adversities, you know, and that I've had to overcome, that's been a huge role that plays into it. But just, I always just, anytime we can empower people more, I just saw that there's such a need. How many tapes have we heard over and over and over where we hear someone they're so disconnected from this person? It's like, these are real people. Mm-hmm. I know we go from call to call to call to call, and we take, you know, we totaled up one of our dispatchers how many calls she took in just 1 year, and it was 5,000, like 200 and something calls. And I'm like, sheesh, I think we forget. Yeah, that's just in a center my size. That's one person taking that many calls. And I think it's hard to be compassionate for each and every one of those, but we have to be. And so that's why when, you know, this class, this that I taught for the Denise Amberlee Foundation, that was Say This, Not That. It is one of it's like it holds a special place in my heart just because of the importance of it. You know, validating people's feelings, you know, letting them know that we're here. Sometimes you'll have a dispatcher or a tape that you'll hear, and it wasn't bad, but it wasn't, you know, there, but it was obvious that, you know, you just didn't feel that comfort, you know, and that, and when people call, hopefully that's the only time they have to call. Hopefully, you know, and I just don't think that that's always being conveyed. So I hope that, you know, and maybe sometimes people don't know how to do it. So, you know, that's why I was like, this class, it's important.
It was definitely a good class because, you know, and I said it earlier, and I've said this before in other episodes as well. When people are calling in, that might be their first time that they're calling in. And depending on how you react, you know, of course, we treat every one of them like an emergency. Even if it sounds off the wall, you know, this is their emergency. This is their version of an emergency, and you treat it as such. But if it's that first time, if it happens to be the first time that they're calling in, and you know, you're however you convey what you want to convey and the way you put it, your tone or whichever, those people, that person might not ever call again. You know, they might, and especially if it's like a domestic situation or something, they might not feel comfortable calling in after that. They've had enough, you know, at home that they're going through or whichever. And then if someone is rude with them on the phone where they're supposed to be getting help, they might not ever call again. So, you know, that's the same thing as, you know, as you're talking and stuff and how to respond to certain people. With this class, though, I guess, what was more of some inspiration than putting that out? Was it just that, or was there more to it?
So with my personal life, so I guess we'll do just like a little mini dive into that, you know. Mm-hmm. So I grew up in a domestic violence filled home, you know. So my dad, he actually used to be a police officer, and my mom was a dispatcher. That's how they met, you know. But domestic violence, it doesn't know boundaries like that. Like, it doesn't, it doesn't stop. It doesn't matter how much money you make. It doesn't matter how, you know, it doesn't matter, stuff like that. So anyways, it was something, you know, growing up with, and then till one night, like frog in boiling water, just kept getting worse and worse and worse until my father ended up killing my mom and my sister. So yeah, after that, I ended up moving, and I got placed with the state custody. And once I was with state custody, my dad, he didn't lose his parental rights, but he did sign, put my uncle in charge of raising us, or which was his brother. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they were raising us, and, but it just, you know, they were great aunt and uncles, you know, in that regard, like in a sense of like, but they didn't, you know, they weren't, it was, I, for whatever reason, you know, they would like, they would tell us like, hey, you know, hey, we can't love you because we didn't, you're not our own. We can't love you like that. And for me, it was like, what, you know, like, I didn't understand. I'm like, I needed a parent. I needed this. And so mm-hmm. there was a huge, barrier. Like we, I mean, in here I was just 9. It wasn't like I did anything wrong. Like, and I needed love, and I needed, you know, that. And anyways, and so here it was broken. It was different things. And so I ended up, eventually, so I actually ran away when I was 17. So when I was 17, I ran away. And there was other things involved with that, but just not enough time to go into everything. right. You know, but it was, there was a lot of, there was other things going on that like, but here I am, you know, I ran away, but I was determined not to be a statistic. I wanted to be better, than that. I was going to rise above things, and I still got good grades. I got my scholarship, but 3 days after I graduated high school, I got hit by a car. I was biking to and from work, and I got hit by a car. And I was young, so I couldn't afford car insurance. Anyways, I got life flighted. I got brain surgery. And I'm like overwhelmed with all these bills. And they're telling me my health insurance isn't going to cover it and all these things. And just, you know, I just felt very alone, you know, not having that parent come in and swoop in and be like, let me take care of this and be that like advocate for me. And to just, I just felt all the world's pressure. And here I was still only 17. And I was like, you know, I just felt like that life wasn't, it didn't matter how hard I was going to work in life, that it wasn't going to work out. And so anyways, once I was discharged, they gave me a giant bottle of OxyContin. I took the whole bottle to my mom's grave, and I was just determined, like, this is, I'm just going to be done. Like, this is, you know, it didn't matter how hard I tried, that my destiny wasn't to be anything better. And so anyways, but I got a phone call, luckily, from a friend, like a coworker who didn't even have my number. And they were like, hey, I just felt really impressioned to give you a call. And that was all I needed. That was my hook. That was what I needed. And so knowing that, I know that sometimes when, as dispatchers, we get so not tired, but like desensitized when we get called, especially from youth who are like, I'm going to kill myself. And people be like, ugh, then just do it. You know, like I've heard dispatchers, you know, or they'll say like, oh, well, you know, like, you know, they're like, oh my gosh, what is it? Teen angst or this or that, or like, you know, or they'll kind of make fun of people. But if people knew my whole story, I don't think that anybody would have judged me, you know, just based on everything. I mean, I lost my parents. I lost my home. I was forced to move. I mean, and I didn't grow up, like I didn't get just the Cinderella story after. Mm-hmm. And, it, you know, it was Harry Potter. I guess that's the better way to describe it. And, you know, and it was hard. And we never know anyone's full story. And because we don't know someone's full story, we need to have that compassion. And even though we only touched their lives for 2 minutes, it can be more impactful than we can ever realize. All it took for me was a phone call. And that's why I'm still here today. And if that was just a phone call, imagine what kind of phone call we can have affecting. I mean, the ripple effect, the way that you can measure things, it would, I mean, it's limitless, honestly, like the amount [S2] Right. [S1] Of change that we can do. So that's, you know, it just became a passion for me, something that I want to push. And, you know, just help other people see the other side. And it will, I mean, it'll give dispatchers fire. Like, oh, yeah, I am doing good when, you know, even though I'm helping this and this and this. It's not just, you know, teen angst, I guess, if that makes sense.
Damn. That was, so I usually have like a closing question as a wrap up. And there is, I don't think there's anything that I can say that will, That was perfect. I mean, that just your story alone, and the fact that, so in the beginning, you know, you had said that, how did you put it? That you were kind of a nerd, that you, yeah. you know, you graduated yeah. early at 17. However, there was also not the part until just a little bit ago where this stuff happened to you as well. So even through a lot of this, you know, that still happened at 18. You wanted to do dispatch. You had that exposure from the beginning. You had all of this connection. But also during that, it was a phone call that basically saved you.
Yeah.
And that has been this passion of yours since then. I mean, that fully ties everything full circle, ties it all up to this has been a motivation, a passion. This is why you do what it is that you do. The, you know, part of this class that you put out there as well. I mean, it just, I've got goosebumps as I'm talking about this. Like, this is amazing.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I mean, honestly, sometimes it can be overwhelming, like our personal lives, and then just work. Sometimes we think like, well, how can I make change? And it's the little things. And that's why with a class like these, the class I taught, Say This, Not That, it was just small changes, small phrases, and those small things make a bigger impact than you realize. And, you know, like I am with their foundation, I'm going to teach a, you know, a bigger class that just goes into, you know, overcoming adversity and how to stay. So, and it's that same concept. It's not big things, it's little things, you know? So I do something for me every day, like get a soda. So just it's nice to do something. And those little things in our life or little things on the phone, all that stuff, it's going to make a bigger impact.
That's awesome. The little things, you fully have it. Thank you so much for being on this episode and for sharing your story, for just being so open about everything and just everything that you do. Thank you so very much. It's been an honor to have you on this episode.
Thank you.
I will be right back here with you. For those who are watching, who are listening, if you have any comments, questions, or you want to be a guest on the show, please send us an email to wttpodcast@gmail.com. Once again, that is wttpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter. That is @91podcast. You can like us on Facebook. That is facebook.com/withinthetrenchespodcast. This episode has been sponsored by InDigital, excuse me, as well as Rapid Deploy. And this show will always be free, but if you're looking for any bonus content, some of the stuff that I was talking about in the beginning, you can check us out, and that's going to be patreon.com/WTT podcast again. And as always, thank you all to patrons and all of you who watch, listen, support, and share. I appreciate it more than you know. This episode can be seen on Facebook as well as YouTube and LinkedIn. And for the audio portion of this, you can hear 24/7 on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, your favorite podcasting app, and withinthetrenches.net. Have a good one, everyone.
You just listened to a Code 7 Network podcast. If you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, send an email to wttpodcast@gmail.com.